Hello there, I'm Áine Lawler. This is Your Politics, the RTE Politics Team weekly political podcast. Paul Cunningham, Sandra Hurley and Micheál Lehane with me today. And Paul, we're almost at the end of the first week. There's been loads of money. There's been a plethora of promises. There's been lots of arguments and debates. Is it a campaign that's caught fire yet?
Absolutely not. And yet, to a certain extent, Áine, that's sort of understandable because, you know, all of the parties march out onto the field of battle in the hope and expectation that it's going to be their year, that this time it's going to work. It's all positive. It's usually around the weekend approaching where a couple of polls come out and then you realise that your grand strategy hasn't worked. And then there's winners and losers, and the losers, whoever they might be, start to get angry, narky, and the fight starts. So next week, I'd imagine, the second week of the campaign, it's going to get far more contentious. But this week, we've just had, as you said, loads of policies, and the electorate's been hosed with money. And I think to a certain extent, the electorate is looking at this saying, I'm not quite sure what this means. Mm-hmm. They themselves are just tuning into the election, tuning into the policies, and they're reserving their judgment.
Yeah, I think there's something that actually none of us factored in. I don't know, did the politicians factor it in? I'm talking really fast now because there's other podcast RTs where you do, we have a little bit of humour in it. So, but I think the budget was very near. This was seen as a good thing, positive thing. All the spill out from it, all the payments. What the budget did do is that it put up a whole series of choices that had to be made. And for government parties to suddenly just, even like really days essentially after that budget, to say all those things we didn't do, actually there's no problem with that now. We can do all of that. Now, the damning description of that from the Inthu leader today, Padraig Tobin, was these guys have dual personalities. I think that's a problem. I think that's going to be a bit of a problem in the campaign when it comes to promises. And the promises do seem to be more plentiful than usual. And I suppose that is because of all that money that swishing around from the Apple.
Micheál, we heard the solution to that. The solution to that came from Simon Harris, that he himself wanted to do. He has huge ambition, but he was limited by the one-year fiscal cycle. But now, with this new five-year cycle, yeah, he's able to do everything.
And what we've seen, Sandra, I suppose, dominate the news throughout the first week has been this phony war, hasn't it, between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. I mean, Fianna Fáil would never laugh at teachers, and Fine Gael, it's a backroom strategy to paint Micheál Martin as a grumpy old man. On the other hand, Fine Gael taking a lash at Fianna Fáil's budget costings. So, I mean, it's a sham war, says Louise O'Reilly from Sinn Féin.
Or is it?
Well, it does all seem a bit contrived, you know, let's be honest, because we have been, it has been the case that they have generally got on okay, certainly in public over the last 4.5 years. And suddenly we are to believe that there's just this, they've gone off the cliff and there's been this complete breakdown in relations where previously people got on okay. And I think the other parties have called them out on it. Sinn Féin in particular has said that it's a sham. And I was struck this week when Pascal Donoghue put out a press release taking aim at the Fianna Fáil manifesto. He said it wasn't costed, and he said that there was a full 5 billion euro that they couldn't account for. But I went back, I thought this sounds kind of familiar. And back in January 2020, Pascal Donoghue had another press release also attacking Fianna Fáil. This, of course, was back in the previous general election campaign, attacking Fianna Fáil for having an uncosted fictional manifesto, which he said would be disastrous for the country. So let's be honest, this is just a playbook that the parties are falling back on. We know that it is possible that they could be back in government together if the numbers shake up that way, and they'll have to climb down from all of this.
Except, I'm wondering, is there, you know, the way there's a bit of grit in the shell, a bit of grit in your shoe. I'm wondering where there isn't something real here between Micheál Martin, the Fianna Fáil leader, and Simon Harris, the Fine Gael leader. And we're hearing a lot of talk about mandates. Whoever comes back with the largest number of seats has first call on being Taoiseach. I think that's the real row in the first week.
There's two things there. One is that, you know, when it comes down to individual constituencies, there is no fake war. You know, Fine Gael is going out to steal Fianna Fáil. Fianna Fáil is going out to steal Fine Gael. There is no love lost. There is no weapon that will not be used. So that's one thing, the ground war in each individual constituency. And then on a higher level, you've got Micheál Martin. What is he trying to do? He is avoiding criticising Fine Gael. He is riding high, a presidential, the man of experience who is walking his way forward. It is Simon Harris who's getting more of the, I'm the young Turk, the combative one who is throwing the brickbats. So there's different strategies being adopted, but I think the war itself is real, as you indicate, Áine. And then this is politics. So once the war is over, guess what? Sit down and have a chat.
And it's become more relevant, hasn't it, as the parties have come closer together. And I mean, there was a time when the real bitter internal stuff was within parties, but the fact that they are beginning to draw out of the same pool and that they could be part mm-hmm. of the next government again means that that those days when you had sections of constituencies where you had absolute assurance such was a Fine Gael house, that was a Fianna Fáil house, that's kind of gone. So as a result, yeah. it is more bitter on the ground now, definitely.
And look at the constituencies where they can eat each other's lunch. You know, look at what's happening in Wicklow. For instance, if yes. there is a Harris Hop, does that take out Stephen Donnelly? Dunleera Rathdown. If Barry Ward is to come in with Jennifer Carroll McNeill, does that take out Cormac Devlin?
Yes.
Same with Paul McAuliffe and Noel Rock. I mean, it's replicated all over the mm-hmm. place.
So that's the same thing Dublin Bay South. And it's of particular notice within the Dublin constituencies because Fianna Fáil is still trying to rebuild. If you're trying to rebuild, that means you're viewed as possibly weak and therefore you can be taken out. And that's what I mean. It is undoubtedly real.
Sinn Féin, their campaign so far?
Yeah, kind of haven't really put a foot wrong. I think they have benefited probably from those squabbles, whatever, whether they're real or not, between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. And kind of the biggest moment, I think, so far has been that policy today around immigration, the issue that really troubled them and caused such bother in the local and European elections. And they're taking fairly strong positions on that.
I mean, to a certain extent, they're basically doubling up. If you looked at when it comes to international protection and people coming in seeking asylum here, it was Fine Gael who decided under Helen McEntee, the Justice Minister, to double the number of staff in the IPAS office to try and ensure that you're able to speed up the consideration of those applications, reach a determination more quickly. And then for those who have the decision has come that they're not allowed to stay, that they are asked to leave the state or forced to leave the state. So what Sinn Féin is doing is, I think, 500 at the moment, and they want to get it to 2,000 within the office. But basically they're
trebling staff across the system.
Exactly, to try and sort of do it. So it's basically not auction politics, but it's saying, that's your policy, we're going even harder on it.
But how much are people convinced by just throwing around big numbers and saying, you know, we're going to hire thousands more teachers, there's going to be thousands more GPs under our policy? Health Minister Stephen Donnelly was talking about this today. He said sometimes the opposition, he thinks that they take the government's policy and adds a zero to the end of it. But, you know, it's not the case that it's just government departments. And we're seeing this all over the place. This suggestion that there could be a new government department of infrastructure or a department of disability, the Social Democrats have talked about. It really takes a long time to get something like that to do a big organisational change. And a lot of time is lost in waiting for it to get to the point where it can fulfil its mandate.
And that's been one of the big arguments coming from the two outgoing government parties, that you know, if you start changing course at this stage, it's going to waste time if you want to tackle housing, if you want to do seriously something on childcare. But there's a straight, what's becoming clear in the middle of all these promises and all this loads of money, there's a kind of a straight choice, isn't there, between an offering that's going to focus on supply side measures that help the market, help people cope in the market to, e.g., get a house, that don't interfere with, you know, against an eviction ban because of the effect that could have on the market. And then on the other side, from Sinn Féin and some of the smaller parties, you're getting, you know, no, the state will own the land underneath mm-hmm. the house. The state will have its own building agency. There will be eviction bans. There will be interference in the market. So In the middle of the chaos, those are kind of the shape of the choices.
And I think if you're looking at it, things, it's only the degree of state involvement. All of them want more state.
Yeah.
So if you're looking at childcare, even Fine Gael talking about that they want more of their childcare facilities close to schools with a greater number of places and a higher wage for those people who are working. If you're looking at housing, it's only how much state you want. Look at the Labour Party, which is the state construction firm, something that people before profit have been mm-hmm. calling for 4 years previously. You know, go through it all. And at the same time, additional state support. So more support for carers, more support for people with disability, heading towards a living wage, more support for pensions. The only question is, do you want it index linked and at what point? So one question it raises to me, Anya, is that we're doing this as we have our Apple money, our AIB shares, some savings and economy and greatest number of people employment. What happens if someone in Washington takes over, say, for example, President-elect Trump, introduce some revolutionary economic policies, there is a tailwind coming with it and it hits us. If the state has taken on the financial obligation and then the actual funds coming into the state go down, it leaves whatever future government in a really, really difficult situation. You're either going to have to cut deep because you've taken on those responsibilities, or you're going to have to lash it onto the national debt. which puts you vulnerable. Again, it's a problem, and it hasn't really been debated.
And what is really striking about the election debate so far and what differentiates this election with previous ones is the scale of the largesse. Because of the billions flowing in, because of the Apple tax, it means that parties, political parties, don't have to make too many choices. They're just offering to do everything at a very large scale and put in enormous investment into infrastructure all over the place. But we know it's not easy to spend the money. If it was easy to fix the housing problem by just spending the money, the government would have done it over the last few years. They had the money to do so, but actually getting the money spent and getting the people to build those houses is really difficult.
And getting value for money.
Yeah, so it's back to capacity and delivery. And, you know, obviously it's brilliant if you've got kids that you're getting, you know, the double children's allowance and the run-up to Christmas. It would be brilliant, you know, when you're sending kids back to school to be getting the double child benefit for the month of August. But on the other hand, is that really tackling your problems, your lived experience, the fact that you can't get a place in the creche, the fact that you can't have a second or a third child if you want to because of the cost of childcare? Where are the people going to come from to do all this? Where are the guards going to come from? Where are the nurses going to come from? Where are the builders going to come from? Where are the GPs going to come from? So everyone's making all these promises, but it's hard to see where the capacity is going to be to deliver on all this money.
That came up on, and it's notable that Micheál Dehaene has just left the podcast studio, and it better be damn good reason. I think we should quiz him when he comes back in here.
But I think some news might be breaking, actually. That
I'm not so sure. He's probably down betting on the, you know, Kempton races, 350, you know, 20 quid and Golden Boy. Just on the issue of capacity, it came up in that conversation you were having this morning on Morning Ireland. This recording Thursday afternoon, so it was Thursday
morning.
Childcare
one, yes.
And it was saying...
It was really interesting,
wasn't
it?
Because it came back to the idea, how are you going to get those people to work in childcare? How can you get onto the colleges to get the numbers? How can you give them the wage to ensure that they can see that they're able to live and be able to do that and sustain it? And you can replicate that self-same question right across the board for everything that we've been talking about for the past couple of minutes.
And I think something that's also evident in the past week is that the political parties are sort of price matching each other. So we saw Fine Gael yesterday come out with this idea that it was going to get rid of the means test for the carer's allowance. Sinn Féin did come up with that first. Mary Lou McDonald said this morning that imitation was the sincerest form of flattery. On childcare, Labour, I think over a year ago, said that they would reduce the cost of childcare down to €200 per month. Sinn Féin, Fine Gael, others all following in their wake. It's because the money is there. And if you look at the government parties, Fine Gael in particular, they're trying to neutralise these issues. Anything that could give Sinn Féin in particular an advantage, they're trying to take it off the table.
Do you know what I'm surprised we haven't heard more discussion of is what Owen Murphy said about his time in housing in his book, given particularly that the opposition argument is to Fine Gael in particular and also to Fianna Fáil, that since 2011 or 2016, they have variously been responsible for homelessness and housing and all the rest that has gone wrong since. And you had Owen Murphy wanted a referendum on the right to housing in the Constitution, wanted a national emergency declared. He wanted a number of other things that are slipping my mind at the moment. But they were, I mean, a lot of them sounded very like Sinn Féin policies back in 2019.
I suppose the first thing you have to say, this is a book written by Owen Murphy. So Owen Murphy has an entitled to be able to say what Owen Murphy was thinking. Mm-hmm. But it should beg the question, well, what do other people respond to what he had to say and indeed his presentation? Here's Micheál back into the podcast. I was saying you had a bet of 20 quid on the 320 in Kempton with Golden Boy.
That's it, yeah.
But it's an interesting one. Now, Sandra, you were looking at the detail that was in some of the book that was presented in the papers. And it's an interesting presentation about what was going on.
Yeah, because he is an insider. He was at the cabinet table. And in particular, he says that he was blocked by Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, the Attorney General Seamus Woolf, and by the Finance Minister Pascal Donoghue, that he was blocked from doing what he wanted to do to make housing the number one priority. And he really said that they were too focused on Brexit as well, that Brexit was seen as the number one priority. Housing was further down. Now, clearly, this is a man who has a lot he feels he wants to get off his chest. It is a biased view, of course, but I think it's something that the opposition have already latched onto, and I think we'll see it thrown back at Fine Gael in the leaders' debates over the next 2 weeks.
Of course, nominations don't close until Saturday. We're hearing this afternoon that one candidate who's received, or potential candidate who's received a lot of attention, Jerry Hutch, that he has lodged his papers to stand in the Dublin Central. Presumably, we'll be hearing more about that. But this is very much, it's been called, hasn't it, Micheál, the year of the independence. So It's hard in national debates and coverage, isn't it, to get a sense of the impact they're having. But there's a lot of them in all those constituencies around the country.
Yeah, there is. And they seem to have momentum. And you can see the fear in the other parties, all the bigger parties saying don't vote for independence. Simon Harris essentially telling the farmers that it was because of their voting for independence the last time that he ended up having to form a government with the Greens. That was the subtext, really, of what he was trying to say. So you can see there is a degree of fear there. I'm not sure just as to how big the numbers will be in the end. It could be over 20, but will it hit the 30 mark? I'm not so sure. And as to what form they will take, there does seem to be a preference, doesn't there, among bigger parties to form a government with a smaller party if they need that third option rather than looking to independence.
I know, are the regionals, I think, Micheál Martin has repeatedly said that the regional group are people you could do business with. You know, these are people like Sean Canney, Dennis Nocton, who is leaving obviously as a TD, but he sees them as the more solid group.
Michael Lowry,
exactly, who has supported governments previously. So
there's
room there.
This is Mary Lou McDonald's argument, though, isn't it? That if you vote for an independent, you're putting Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael back in, and presumably she's referring to the history with the Independent Alliance.
But that's two ways. One, that they would put Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael back in, but also that many of them are Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael candidates. That's the other part.
Yeah, Jean Poo. It's interesting, this message that's been going around, the research that's been going around on the anti-incumbency vote. We saw it in the States. We've saw it in the UK. It's been seen in elections all around the place in this year of elections. So how would that manifest here in Ireland? Because we have an outgoing coalition that's been able to throw loads and loads of money and is still promising loads and loads and loads more money. I'm wondering whether that anti-incumbency thing, maybe that's going to end up in an independent vote, that it would become an anti-party feeling rather than
I think it comes down to the cost of living. And if you talk to politicians who are out on the doorsteps at the moment, they're all saying the cost of living and housing are the two biggest issues coming up. And the cost of living, even though people have been given lots of once-off payments, even though the rate of inflation is falling, prices are still going up. But people are saying we feel worse off now than we were back in 2020. And I think that's a dangerous position for the government parties to be in, because if people want to lash out, they're just going to say, I feel worse off under the current government, so I'm going to vote for somebody else. And that's really what we saw happening in America.
You could see, like, in some of those things, like, take for example, if you're looking at petrol and diesel, the price has gone down. But if you're looking at reinsuring your home, it's still going up, and sometimes by 20, 30%. So, and even if something like energy is stabilised, it's still 40% higher than it was, you know, when the election
was
called.
This is another issue. I don't understand why it's not a bigger question in the campaign. We have some of the highest energy prices in Europe and have had consistently. And given, you know, the problems with the grid and the problems with developing offshore wind and all the, you know, the work that need and money that needs to be spent there, it looks as though, you know, for all the supports people are getting at the moment, those bills are going to stay amongst the highest for a long time to come.
Fianna Fáil are going to bring them in line with EU prices, they said in their manifesto.
Hey, listen,
by spending on renewables, changing the system, how prices are set, and upgrading the national grid. That's
people before profit are going to take over the ESB, ensure that it is not a commercial-led, but a state-led, not-for-profit organisation,
like,
and reduce energy prices.
They want a four-day working week as well, don't they?
Two more public
holidays.
That
sounds quite positive, actually.
You were talking about the...
at the moment, that would definitely be a good idea for all you hard-pressed...
She said with bleary eyes.
Talking about the theft of ideas earlier, and Paul Murphy evoking the words of Joe Higgins earlier, when he accused Bertie Ahern, of course, in 2004, wasn't it, of rummaging through his wardrobe and stealing all his clothes. He says their clothes have been stolen again now. Things like the state construction company, that's become a mainstream idea.
Bill, I mentioned that early on, but you were
placing
bets on Paddy Power.
Did you mention the Joe Higgins stuff?
No, I didn't do that. Yours was more colourful
description.
You
don't go back that far.
Burn.
The Greens, the sense of being shunned by their former partners, that they nearly seem to be relishing it.
Yeah, it's given them a definition. I think also it's more interesting under someone like Roderick O'Gorman, who is more political. You have a sense that Eamon Ryan was sort of the environmentalist who became a politician to advance the environmental agenda. Roderick is more elementally more political himself. So, yeah, anyone dissing them, they're quite happy with that. And they're prepared to put the boot in. I mean, they were really going for Sinn Féin, in which Roderick O'Gorman is saying, Sinn Féin's climate policy, honestly, has no idea what it means, that they're flip-flopping, that's policy inconsistency. So they're giving it out while they're getting as well. And at the moment, The Greens are happy enough, though, they could go, the way the campaign's going, although we have to issue the qualifications, we're uncertain as to how the campaign's going because it's only week one.
The Greens do seem to have a chance of holding seats here, don't they? Yeah. This isn't the wipeout of 2011.
Certainly in Dublin, I think. Absolutely. There's lots of places where their councillors did very well in the local elections. They topped the poll in quite a few wards across Dublin. So there's definitely a few safe seats.
Anyone hearing Carole anything
Kilkenny
about...
Carole is a possibility too, it seems.
Yeah. Independent Ireland, anyone hearing anything back about how... It's early days, isn't it? I mean,
yeah, and I think
they're strong locally in their areas.
They have a lot of people who've defected from other parties or sort of former Fianna Fáil type people. So people are mentioning Ken O'Flynn in Cork North Central. Noel Thomas only recently left in Galway West. He's in contention there for the final seat. So they could come back with more, certainly. They're at three at the moment. It's a question of holding those. You'd have to say they're reasonably safe and then adding a few more.
OK. Let's wrap this up for now because you've all got places to run to and bulletins to.
Ah, no, this is much. Get out the wine.
Campaigns go on.
Micheál's got another bed.
No, we'll save that. We'll save that till after the election. Let's end up with your moment of the week.
Start at the end.
Moment. Well, I think the confusion over the drug issue, I thought, was one of the stickier moments of the week for Fianna Fáil and the Fine Gael, what Gino Kenny described as moralising on the question in the aftermath since then.
I'll Sandra? Go with the TikTok dancing lady in Monaghan. I'm afraid I can't remember her name at the moment, but she was jiving with both Simon Harris and Mary Lou McDonald, but only Mary Lou McDonald said she knew how to jive. But they both seemed to handle it reasonably well.
For me,
McCarthy did the best jive there, didn't he?
Oh, I didn't
you'd expect that, though, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Jiving at the crossroads.
is that racist on you, Lawler?
You're joking me, Cavan Monaghan, everyone up there can jive.
Yeah, people in Stillorgan can jive too.
No, not the same way.
For me, it is the general election line that didn't roar, the tumbleweed which is rolling past us. We've been waiting for something to happen and we're still waiting.
My moment of the week was that absolutely gorgeous moment when Jack Chambers was arguing very vehemently and with Hildegard Nocton, who was protesting at the way he was interrupting her. It was a big row about their budget costings and figures. And in the middle, Piers Doherty. And the shot is just fantastic because you can see him kind of thinking, almost trying to open his mouth and then thinking better of it. And then just sitting there with this little smile on his face. And you could run the Parks and Recreation music underneath it and just leave it at that. So we leave it there for now and we'll talk to you again next week. Maybe we'll even be envisioned this. All right, talk to you then. Bye.